Thanks, guys. I'm Nicolette. I'm an alcoholic. Nice to be back with you. My sober date is September 15, 2006. My home group is the Mixed Nuts group. We meet on Wednesdays in Summit at 7:30. It's an open speaker meeting. And Mark asked me to present here last three Sundays in August. I had no idea what I was going to do until I walked in here last Sunday. And I was like, I want to talk about step three. Where is that in the book? Oh, yeah, how it works. Oh, no, that's a big chapter. There's a lot of juice there. But last Sunday we covered the first four pages of the chapter. So I just kind of want to go into it and see like what comes out. We stopped on page 62 on the bottom paragraph. And I can't repeat what I talked about last week because I can't remember it either. But on page 62 on the bottom, this is the how and why of it. First of all, we have to quit playing God. Why do we have to quit playing God? It tells us right away. It doesn't work. And I think last week I talked about being convinced of A, B, and C, that I'm powerless over alcohol, that my life is unmanageable, that no human power can relieve my alcoholism, and that God could and would if he were sought. The book talks about being convinced of this, and I think in the original manuscript it says if you're not convinced, you know, throw out the book or go back to page one or whatever it says. But what I'm reading behind that is like, you need to be convinced of that in order for this to make sense to you. They're just verbalizing something, or they were verbalizing in this book something that I've already experienced. I've already experienced this. This is just going to resonate somehow for me by the time I read it. That was my experience. I didn't use these words, I didn't express myself, but by the time I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, me trying to manage my life and my drinking and my thinking failed. Over and over and over and over again. I was tired, I was beaten, I was cornered, I was surrendered, I didn't surrender, surrender occurred, and which allowed me, created the willingness for me to step into the unknown. And then I come into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm presented with this radical work, with this language that I don't understand, and I'm asked to do some radical steps that I've never done before. I have no reference point. It's completely scary, but where I come from is scarier. What I've experienced is scarier. So the motivation and the willingness is coming from, I understand that I need to do this because my life depends on it. There's a desperation and a willingness that's already like the A, B's, and C's that I'm convinced of. I'm already convinced by my experience. I don't need this book to convince me. I don't need to trust the words in these books. They just need to resonate within me. And so something in here resonates. Even that sentence, it's such a powerful sentence. We have to quit playing God. It doesn't work. Is that true for me? And what does that look like in my life? And in its simplest forms, what that looks like is, I think I know better than reality. I think I know better than life. And the position that that puts me in is that I'm constantly in conflict or in argument with what's in front of me. You should be different. She should be different. I should be different. That should have been different. I need this. I don't want that. I can't have that. I will have that. And all of this narrative in my mind, and constantly relying on my mind to inform me. And not really being aligned with like the flow of life, not really like kind of like coming into each day like fresh, like with some like level of like a beginner's mind or like some innocence, like, you know, kind of like cooperating with whatever comes my way. And you know, when I'm cooperating with whatever comes my way, that can only come from a place of trust. But when I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't trust you, and I didn't trust life, and I didn't trust people. And what that creates is a lot of fear, and that fear drives me to want to control and manage life.
This is my me trying to verbalize that sentence in my experience. This is the how and why of it. First of all, this is the first requirement. I have to quit playing God because it doesn't work.
Next, immediately after that, is something that rings true for me. We decided that hereafter, in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal, we are his agents. He is the father, we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arc through which we pass to freedom. I've heard speakers over the years talk about the keystone. I forgot what all of them said it, but it's some kind of an important stone. It doesn't matter, none of them has. Here's what I read here. I need to be willing to get into a relationship. I need to be willing to get into a relationship with God. God of its understanding, my understanding, my misunderstanding, your understanding, it doesn't matter. Higher power, with life, with the mystery, with consciousness, with awareness. I just need to be in a relationship with something that's not stemming from me, not stemming from my mind, right? Not a relationship with self, but a relationship that includes all of life. Right? That's what this tells me. And that something else needs to be the guiding force in my life. Like the principal tells us what to do, or the father takes care of us, or the employer, you know, gives us directions or instructions or whatever it is. It has to be this power that's guiding my life as opposed to me guiding my life. Why? Because my power's been limited. How do I know that? From my experience. I think step three just like really kind of asks us to tell the truth of our experience thus far. For me, I had to be willing to look and agree with the words that I've never verbalized before, really. I mean, we don't really, you know, steps one, two, and three are recognitions, kind of, you know. It's not asking us to do anything. It's asking us, do you relate? Does this ring true? Can we proceed? You know, because you feel this in your experience. You failed at your own experience of managing your own life, managing your own drinking or your alcoholism. I have the experience of relying on my mind to tell me what's true. I have the experience of deceiving myself. I have the experience of being delusional. I have the experience of not knowing true from false, right from wrong. I have the experience of knowing what the right thing is to do, but not having the power to execute that. I had the experience of arguing with life, and life doesn't care how much I'm arguing with it. Life is still life. Reality is still reality. I can argue all I want that he's gone. He's gone. I can argue all I want that he's dead. He's dead. It's not going to bring him back from the dead. It's not going to return him, you know, and stuff like that. But the argument remains, and what happens when I'm in that kind of position, I tend to close up, and I tend to get really, really small and really, really resentful and really, really afraid. And ultimately what happens, and I think this is the heart of the spiritual malady and what the third step is asking us, it's like either I'm feeling disconnected, and this is asking me to like get into a relationship to build connections and to relate to life and to others in a different way. You know, when we sincerely took such a position, so the condition is that I have to be real, I have to be genuine, I have to be sincere. All sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer, an employer we never had before. It's a new one that tells me what to do. Being all-powerful, he's my God, all-powerful. He provided what I needed, not what I wanted. If I kept close to him and performed his work well. So there are some conditions to be real in this relationship that I'm willing to step into. Established on such a footing, on that kind of footing, we become less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. more and more we become interested in seeing what we could contribute to life, as we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully. As we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. I couldn't really verbalize that because, well, here's my experience. On September 14, 2006, on the floor of my apartment under the influence of alcohol, the final solution to my alcoholism was to end my life. And as I contemplated suicide after trying and having failed it all other ways, and experiencing just that beautiful and incomprehensible demoralization that the book like verbalizes so well, and that like irritability, discontent, and shame, and guilt, and remorse, and sadness, and depression, and loneliness, and all of that. Time stopped, and something happened. And I've been trying to honor that for 16 and a half years of my life. It was like a manipulated pause. Something else like got downloaded. My mind stopped. Time stopped. And that moment I was paused. And then that pause lasted quite a long time in my early recovery. Long enough to give me a desperation and a willingness to listen to whatever you had to say and take the directions wholeheartedly. And that's not of my own doing, even though I would like to take credit for it. I'd like to be a good girl and a good student and, you know, perfect in my efforts and stuff like that. I recognize that there's something else was at play. So we call it grace here in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And in spirituality, they call it grace. You know, we also call it like moment of clarity or moment of truth, where just something was surrendered in me, meaning that these concerns of the little me were dropped. Like, it was like no more game left in me. Like, I kept getting checkmated over and over and over again at my effort to face life successfully, which I couldn't. I couldn't face life successfully. I came to a point of like, I cannot drink and I cannot not drink. And I'm drinking when I don't want to drink. And it's like Groundhog Day. I almost said Greyhound Day. This is the difficulties of a foreigner. 30 years in this country. Groundhog Day. It was like Groundhog Day over and over and over again. So for me, it happened not in an intellectual sense, and it took me a long time to recognize this, but since then it has happened in various ways in my sobriety, where I'm trying to manage or control some outcome, some relationship in my life, or I'm in argument with what I'm being presented with, or an experience that I'm having, whether at work or in a relationship or in my family, and I am finding myself cornered by my own efforts to manage and control it. And I literally get reduced to prayer and meditation, which I fight up until that point. But I get reduced to that. I get so humbled. You know, I get so humbled by my lack of power. You know, when I'm trying to run the show, and energetically for me, that's a very contracted place. I become very, very small and tight. When I read this paragraph we just read, it's incredibly expansive. There's something very expansive about it. More and more, I become interested in you. More and more I become interested in others. It's almost like the mind is not in play, the heart's at play, because I know my heart can bear it all. So some other energy is starting to like kind of show up in my life. This like, due to this relationship with God. If I'm willing to have this relationship with God, the moment I'm willing to sincerely take such a position, what happened for me is like I no longer felt alone. I found comfort that somebody or something was walking alongside me.
that something was present in my life, right? That immediately is incredibly expensive. So we were now at step three. Many of us said to our Maker, as we understood him. And so this is the affirmation of the decision to get into this relationship. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou will. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. I've said this prayer so many times. I love this prayer. Sometimes I only say one statement of this prayer. I've done periods in my recovery where I would only like do the first sentence of the prayer for a week or two. I always constantly go to this place of relieve me of the bondage of self, because I know that this is the crux of the problem. I'm self-obsessed and I'm reliant on self. And I continuously go back to that place that just like is limited. It doesn't feel connected to life. Doesn't feel connected to like life energy or to you. It disconnects me because I have some of my own agendas about how I want things to be. Because why? Because I'm in fear. I'm in fear that I'm not going to get something, or I'm going to lose something, or so I'm not really in the present moment. When I'm in fear and when I'm in self, I'm not really here and now with you. I'm not here present for what's in front of me, so I can't align with the power of what's here and now, because I'm in my head. I'm in the virtual reality with my ideas about what I should have and what I shouldn't have, or in some kind of an argument, right? And I'm driven by that. I'm driven by these agendas, right? So I need relief. I literally needed to drop from the neck down. Because looking back at my life, I lived very much from the neck up. I very much lived from the neck up. And so all of my relationships were based on the commentary and the narrative in my mind. It wasn't fresh, it wasn't genuine, it wasn't spontaneous, it wasn't organic, it wasn't like what's here in front of me right now, what's being presented, unfolding at its own pace, kind of like trusting that life is going to present whatever it presents, that it can't be any other way. It's almost like constantly looking for security. We see this in the fourth step, we see this in the areas of self. And in our instincts when we write inventory, and what drives us, what's underneath all of these arguments. Eventually we see that. I didn't see that when I first read this. I had the experience of the third step before I read the big book. I didn't know that. There was something organic and spontaneous about just kind of stepping into the unknown, motivated by this first step experience. First step experience really motivates the rest of this. You know, this just kind of gave it words. This just kind of like verbalized the decision. And it was a beautiful prayer to work with, to affirm that which I've already been experiencing for quite some time. I can't do this on my own. I don't know what I'm doing. I keep failing at what I'm doing. I don't know what's best for me. I can't see the truth from the false. I lied to myself. And I'm disconnected. I feel disconnected. I don't feel connected. And who wouldn't want relief from that? What am I getting relief from? Self. I need relief from myself. So self is the problem. Self is the problem. And I didn't know that I could question. I didn't know that I could question my mind. I mean, they didn't teach me that in elementary school. I mean, nobody told me I could ever question my mind. My mind said, you're a certain way, and I'm like, yeah, you're a certain way. You know, that I'm a certain way also. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready. Yeah, so it's just like an attitude. There's like a sincerity we bring into this. There's like a, again, what makes me ready? How do I take this position sincerely? What is the attitude I'm bringing into this? It's just an affirmation that I'm going to continue on this road, that I'm going to have this experience. Motivated by what? For me, it was motivated by step one experience. If I really know that I'm powerless over alcohol, if I really experienced that powerlessness, and it wasn't an intellectual understanding, I'll know that I know that I'm screwed. I even there's a part of me that respects alcoholism. It told me who's going to be next to me, what state I'm going to live in, what cup I'm going to pee in, what I'm going to have, how much money I'm going to have in my pocket, who's going to like me, who's not going to like me, who's going to talk to me, who's not going to talk to me, how I'm going to feel. I mean, come on. Like, you know, it's like not a bad case of flu. You know, it's not going away. If it's chronic and it's fatal, and if it's chronic, it's like always there, it's always present, whether I'm drinking or not. I'm just like relieving myself with alcohol. And I'm powerless over it before I pick up the drink, I'm powerless over it after I pick up the drink. After I pick up the drink, the physical craving takes over, I get thirsty. I mean, like, I like to drink, like I drink a lot and I drink fast and I can't, you know, once I go, I go. But I also have a mind that somehow convinces me, despite the stuff I've experienced just the night before, two nights before, promises I made to my own self, or not wanting to disappoint loved ones or lose something, despite that I have a mind that also has convinced me repetitively that I can handle just a couple, I need it, I deserve it, it's my life, nobody will know, I'll figure it out. Or a mind that tells me, tomorrow. Like, why not today? I've never asked my mind, why not today? It's always tomorrow. But why not today? And an inability to really be honest about that stuff. Because I can't give up that thing which has been relieving me of self and allowing me to meet life the best I can meet life. Because I'm operating on a failed system. I operate on a failed system without God. I operate on a failed system without spirituality. I operate on a failed system. Failed system is a very painful system to live by. I need relief. We found it very desirable to take this spiritual step with an understanding person, such as our wife, best friend, or spiritual advisor, or sponsor. But it is better to meet God alone than with one who might misunderstand. The wording was, of course, quite optional, so long as we expressed the idea. What's the idea? The idea of surrender. Surrender of step one, just kind of like, continues to roll out into two and three and four. That expression of like, I can't do this alone, I don't know what I'm doing, and I need help. It just expresses itself through the rest of the work. That's why step one can be so incredibly powerful, and that's why I've seen in my experience that having issues with any other step is usually an issue with step one. Voicing it without reservation or saying it out loud, I was told, in early recovery. This was only a beginning, though if honestly and humbly made an effect, sometimes a very great one was felt at once. That's a promise, but it has conditions that I'm honest and that I'm humble. But I'm humbled and honest by the experience, not by saying this prayer. The attitude I bring to this prayer is that I need help. I need help. This is like my expression of that. It's my like an expression of what I see in you when I walk into AA as a newcomer. I saw people who had more sober time than me, and some of you were smiling. I didn't like all of you, and I didn't want what all of you had, and I didn't think all of you were as sober as you were saying. like as long sober as you were saying, like that was like it was hard to wrap my mind around it. But some of you were incredibly attractive. You know, so you were the first examples of the value of this work, so to speak. What am I doing? Okay, and then it says, next. That's a timeline. Next. We launched out on a course of vigorous action. Vigorous meaning strenuous effort, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. I never attempted personal house cleaning. I never took my own inventory or looked at myself. Though our decision, the step three decision, was a vital and crucial step, which means life-giving and incredibly important, it could have little permanent effect unless it once, that's a timeline, immediately followed by strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which have been blocking us. Basically, I can say the third step prayer all I want, but unless I follow it up with the action of taking the rest of the steps, it's not really going to, it's not a real decision. It's not a decision that's followed by action. And all decisions usually followed by action will bear results, but decisions that are not followed by action are not going to bear results. So the book warns me off the bat. Again, let's verbalize your experience of step one. Let's verbalize your experience of step two and what the solution is to alcoholism. Let's make a decision to proceed with that solution that we talk about in step two. Third step is just the affirmation, just a decision. To do what? To be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is a 12-step, it's a 12-step club, which means we want you to have an experience with the 12 steps and what experience they bring about. And the first of those is personal house cleaning, so that I can see if I'm wanting to have a relationship with life and I want to have a relationship with God, but I know that my mind is full of old ideas about life and how I relate to life and what I think about myself, and that I'm driven by fear and I can't really be rid of that stuff on my own power, and I know I can't change myself and I'm cornered in this place. I'm in this position of feeling cornered. Then I need to be willing to look at that stuff. What's standing in the way of me having the best life I can have? What's standing in the way of me being aligned with life or feeling connected to life or God or to you or to the depth of my own being? What's standing in the way? All of my old ideas and arguments with life, with my family, with my past, the experiences I had, the resentments, the fears, the harms that bring me shame and regret and guilt and remorse that continuously drive me to want relief. I don't want relief from life, I want relief from what I think about life. What has happened, but my story about what has happened is what's bringing me suffering today. I can be suffering today about an event that's happened 20 years ago. The event is not making me suffer. The event is no longer present. It's not happening. But I live in the mind, and I live in what's not happening. And boy, is it powerful. Boy, is the mind powerful. And we have plenty of experiences of that. Life is precious and beautiful, and it convinced me that I should end it. My mind convinced me that the only solution to my alcoholism is death. My mind convinced me that if I'm not in control of life, I should die. Bill talks about it in his story. He's a classic case. He's a classic case study in mental obsession and wanting to control his drinking. He talks about, I can't drink, I can't eat breakfast unless I have 6 beers and 2 gins or something like that. And then in the very next sentence he says, nevertheless, I still thought I could control the situation. What's bringing him continued suffering? That he thinks he can still control the situation. It's not even the 6 beers and 2 bottles of gin. It's not even that moment. It's his opinion or commentary about that. So it's my perception of life that needs to be looked at, evaluated, questioned, reflected on. I don't know any other way than the fourth step. I think it's a beautiful instrument for us that forced me to be honest, really. And to see what's standing in the way of me having a peace of mind. I don't remember a peace of mind before coming into AA. I mean, that's like an anomaly, like peace of mind. That was funny, guys. And then it says that our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. This is kind of along the lines of what I was talking about, right? Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step 4. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and a fact-facing process. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsellable goods, to get rid of them promptly and without regret. Not really in an emotional way, right? It's kind of like it's the same in a detached way. It's almost like I'm taking inventory of the failed system. Right? I don't need to defend it. I don't need to defend it. I need to protect it. I just need to see that there are certain things that are operating in my life that are really not working. They're really not an expression of my highest potential as a human being, so to speak. And those are the causes and conditions I get to see in the fourth step, because I see that when I'm driven by fear is when I have agenda. Only when I'm driven by fear I have agenda. I want something, and so I want to protect it. And so I'm going to defend it. And I'm going to defend it to anybody that comes my way who might take it away from me. And I will lie to myself to do that. And this is why it's asking us to be a little bit detached from that. It's like without regret. Like, it's for me, the fourth step prayer, the only fourth step prayer I've ever had is I just want to see the truth. I just want to see the truth. With no agenda, not serving me or anybody, just want to see what's really true. And so the interest is in the truth. That's the interest. The interest becomes that. And that kind of goes along those lines of like, see the truth because the truth will set you free. I didn't understand that until I wrote a fourth and had an experience of a fifth. For the first time in my life, I experienced the wisdom of that statement. You know, see the truth because the truth is... Because, you know, we'll say all these, like, wise things that, you know, I'll hear these wise things and they, like, resonate with me on some level, but if you, like, really ask me to dissect it or give you an example, I'd be like, what? I don't know. You know? But it wasn't until I wrote out a fourth step and had an experience of the fifth step that I saw the value of just seeing the truth. Because I want to be free. And freedom is promised. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly, continuously asking me in our work to be willing to be honest. And we talked about that a lot, actually. I think last Sunday I remember talking about self-honesty a lot and emotional self-honesty that this work really requires for us to recover. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. So I'm unpacking the stuff that doesn't work. It just doesn't really serve. It doesn't serve me, it doesn't serve you, it doesn't produce, it's not aligned, it doesn't connect with the power of life, it doesn't make me feel like I'm traveling lighter through life. You know? being convinced that self. Am I convinced that self manifested in various ways is what had defeated me? Am I convinced of that? It's already said that we talked about all this in the third step over and over and over again. He covers this. I mean, we're on page 64 of the big book. I think it's one of the most powerful statements in the big book. Don't quote me on that because I've said that about a lot of statements in the big book. But boy, is this a powerful statement in the big book. I think we can run workshops only on this one statement. I can't, but I'm sure somebody can. Being convinced that self manifested in various ways is what defeated me. What defeated us. What do they mean by that? Self manifests itself in what ways? Resentment. Resentment is one of them. Resentment. So self manifesting itself as a resentment, or as fear, or as harms, or as self-pity, or self-justification, or self-rationalization, or whatever it is what defeats me. This is what defeats us. This is what defeats us. This is what doesn't serve me. This is what I need not to live by. This is what I need not to honor. This is what I need not to protect. This needs to be discarded. This needs to be looked at, and I need to be honest about these things. How is that working for me, protecting that? And the common manifestations of self. So, like I said, some people call it the ego, or the little me, or the mini me, or Migo. I heard somebody say Migo, and I like that. I wrote it in my big book, Migo. I think I want to stop there. Can I stop there? Yeah. And then I'll go into it next. Yeah, that's good. That's good for me. Thank you. Okay. Yeah.